And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, 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 and a very good morning to you. It's 4 minutes past nine, and it's Wednesday, the 12th of March. How are you all keeping? I hope you're very well. It is a lovely, bright and breezy morning here across the northwest of Ireland, and it's looking, you know, unseasonably dry for the next week. We already know that those of you that have organised St. Patrick's Day celebrations for Sunday, you're going to get a mostly dry day, decent temperatures. And for next Monday as well, it's looking good for those that are running their events on the Monday. So that's all good, isn't it? Hopefully everyone will be able to get out and enjoy it. But we've quite a bit of this week to deal with first. And we've got loads coming up on the show for the next 3 hours to pass your Wednesday morning. We want you to help us do so by getting in contact with us, your WhatsApps and texts. We love hearing from you. 086 6025000, 086 6025000. If you're outside the Republic, it's 0035386 6025000. If you prefer to give us a call, 0749125000. Caroline Orr is producing, as always, assisted by Shannon Wilkins. And if you want to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. And I encourage you to, if you listen to the podcast or indeed the overnight repeat, to make sure that you feel involved in the conversation and WhatsApp and email us there, and we can pick them up and include them in the next live show. And if it suits you, and only if it suits you, you can watch all of the show or elements of the show live every single day. We broadcast for 3 hours. You can watch it on your mobile device, on your tablet or your laptop, on Facebook, Highland Radio News, Sport and Obituaries, or Highland Hub. And we're on the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland, which means that if you have a smart TV or Fire Stick or other Google device, you can open up the YouTube app and just have us in the front of your corner, in the corner or above the fire in your front room, or maybe on the kitchen wall, just so that you can keep in touch with what's happening across the northwest and beyond. Okay, let's have a look at the papers today. We'll go with the Finn Valley Voice, shall we? Finn Valley carer concern over long-term respite bed closures at St. Joseph's Hospital. A Finn Valley carer has raised deep concerns over the future availability of respite beds at St. Joseph's in Stranorlar following a HICWA inspection in June 24 that necessitated the temporary closure of several beds for essential refurbishments and fire safety upgrades. The carer, whose mother frequently used the respite services at St. Joseph's, has struggled to adapt to alternative arrangements at a private nursing home. And you can hear that person's story in that paper. It's a big day for Micheál Martin today. He's finally going to get to meet a US president. It's D-Day. He has a meeting with Donald Trump. It's going to be really interesting to see how this goes. I hope from our country's perspective that it works out really well, that the messaging that he's hoping to deliver to Donald Trump, that, right, OK, there is a trade deficit between our countries, but we are massive investors in the United States. We're massive consumers of United States products, and there's an awful lot of us that claim to be Irish living in the United States. So hopefully it goes well. It might not, though, because there's a few potential fly in the ointments. We shall see. But I'll read on here. It's a D-Day for Taoiseach Micheál Martin, who will have to win over US President Donald Trump at a crunch White House meeting. The two have never met before, and Mr. Martin will be meeting Mr. Trump on the traditional visit for St. Patrick's Week amid threats of tariffs and claims by the US of an imbalance on trade between the US and Ireland. Mr. Martin will push economy, economy, economy at the meeting between the two men behind closed doors, a government source said. He'll also emphasise the trade relationship between the two countries as a two-way relationship that works for Ireland and the US. Mr. Martin will listen and engage with Mr. Trump in the knowledge that the meeting between Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, Mr. Trump and his Vice President J.D. Vance descended into a shouting match at the Oval Office in recent weeks. Now, the difference with this president is the presidential staff and Micheál Martin's staff have already arranged everything that's going to happen. They know what's going to be said. They know the choreography of it all, right? That's all decided. Now, if it was a Biden or a Harris or Reagan or whatever, you kind of stick to that. The issue is that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance and others around him don't necessarily stick to the script. So if all goes to plan, it'll be hugely successful. But if it doesn't go to plan, it could be a problem. Now, one of those problems could be the Burkes, because Irish officials were on high alert after members of the Burke family were spotted on the flight from Dublin to Washington by reporters travelling to cover the Taoiseach's meeting with US President Donald Trump. while Father Sean, Mother Martina and daughter Amy, joined by one brother, would not answer questions about their journey, the White House did not immediately say if the family were formally invited to attend events as part of St. Patrick's Day celebrations. The evangelical Christians are known for their protests and doorstepping of high-profile figures. It's not known if the family were invited by Mr. Trump, billionaire confidant Elon Musk, who last week reacted to a video from Ms. Burke and one of her sons. So Elon Burke, who's incredibly influential, is very familiar with Elon Burke, isn't it? With his story and the Burke story. He's shared their stuff before. He's commented about, he shared posts that claims that he was in prison simply because he was anti-transgender, right? So he may well have put them down as visitors for that meeting. We don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch on. I don't know what you think about it. Would you like, I presume, you'd like Micheál Martin's visit to go well, wouldn't you, without any disruption or what have you? I don't know. What do you think? 086 60 25,000. Seemingly some good news as it relates to a ceasefire in Ukraine emerged yesterday. As I say, I'm not obsessed with these stories. They're just on the front of all the papers, and inside you have to go to page 456 sometimes to find something else. But Vladimir Putin was last night under huge pressure to end the war in Ukraine. It came after a dramatic breakthrough in which Vladimir Zelensky backed a US peace plan. Senior Ukrainian officials signed off on an American proposal for a 30-day ceasefire, which could eventually bring an end to 3 years of bloodshed. The so-called deal in the desert was agreed after 9 hours of intense talks in the Saudi Arabian city of Jeddah. Last night, US President Donald Trump said he would talk directly to Putin, telling reporters, "It takes two to tango. I hope he will agree." So it is an interesting development. It's a significant development because Ukraine has agreed to whatever terms the United States put down, potentially, presumably, as it relates to not just the ceasefire, but what form it would take and what form conversations might take going forward. And it does put pressure on the Russians now, who are cozying up to the United States, to sort of say, right, we'll accept that. If they don't, they'll look like the antagonist in these negotiations. Many people feel they're the antagonist, full stop, but you understand where I'm coming from. So it's going to be an interesting day to see how Russia responds to that. If the Ukrainians are happy with it, and it certainly stops a needless war, it seems, and the needless loss of young life, well, I would sleep a bit better at night, I think. On to the Irish Times, and this is actually another thing that the US administration had a big deal about, and that was the relationship between social media and governments. And there is this sense that the relationship between Meta, Facebook, and formerly X, Twitter, under Jack's stewardship, were really at the beck and call of governments. And that's what changed when Donald Trump took over. Obviously, Elon Musk owns X, but also Mark Zuckerberg, who owns Meta, he's cozied up to Trump too and got rid of DEIs and moderators, content moderators, etc. So what was the relationship like, or is it like, between Facebook and the Irish government? Well, a former Facebook executive has lifted the lid on extensive Irish efforts to court the social media giant, saying the company was given a special phone for contacting the government if it encountered any problems in Dublin. The claim was made in a new book by Sarah Wynne Williams, who was among senior Facebook figures who discussed tax and data regulation in private talks with then Taoiseach Enda Kenny a decade ago. She says Sheryl Sandberg, a top Facebook official, received the special phone on her first Irish business trip after the company decided in 2008 to locate its European HQ in Dublin. The phone connected her to someone in the Irish government who could solve any problem or address any accommodation she needed. What was expected in return? Obviously, this was good for Ireland, wasn't it? A big US multinational basing itself here. Miss Wynne Williams was once Facebook's director of global public policy, but she since filed a whistleblower complaint about the company to US regulators. This book is a mix of out-of-date and previously reported claims about the company and false accusations about our executives, Facebook said. Of course, they're not going to like it, are they? We mentioned yesterday, and there seems some quite some certainty in the media that water charges were eventually going to come in. And I'm conscious that you business owners out there are creased with them as it is, but I mean domestic water charges. And it was being framed as them being domestic water charges for excessive use only, and that families would get a very generous amounts of water before they might have to pay. An update to that story, the Irish Daily Star. Water charges will not be brought back, the Taoiseach has pledged. It comes as opposition parties accuse the government of trying to reintroduce the water charges through the back door. Attempts to reintroduce metered water charges as part of the bailout programme were abandoned in 2014 after mass protests. Under commitments in the previous programme for government, work was initiated on draft regulations for charges for excessive water use. A recent briefing document prepared for new Housing Minister James Brown lists finalising the draft household water conservation charge regulations as a high-level priority. However, speaking to reporters in Austin, Texas yesterday, Mr. Martin said there will be no return to water charges. The Department of Housing also said that Minister Brown is not giving consideration to bringing in excessive use charges at this time. So they've, pardon the pun, blown that story out of the water. We'll watch and see what goes on. Have you seen the images of the aftermath of the collision between the oil tanker and the when they carry the big crates? My head's fried today with this head cold. It'll come to me now in a second. But survivors of the North Sea tanker smash told yesterday of their miracle escape after they were rammed out of the blue. Crew on US vessel Stena Immaculate fled within seconds to spare following the collision with Portuguese-flagged cargo ship. That's the word I'm looking for. Salong. Yesterday, UK police launched a criminal probe and arrested a 59-year-old thought to be a Salong crew member on suspicion of gross negligence, manslaughter. A person did die. The positive thing is I suppose, that these ships are not going to sink and they can be towed to safety and it will limit pollution. But if you watch the marine traffic video footage of it, it really is quite remarkable. The one is anchored. The cargo ship is anchored and the tanker just comes straight down and into it. And you just think in this day and age, with all the warnings that must go on, and do you know what? Who will answer some questions on that for us is Charles from Charles James and the Rise. They're in on Friday. That's the job he does out foreign, as they say. It'll be interesting if he didn't mind answering questions in relation to that. If you're a Manchester United supporter, well, it's a good day today because the way football supporters are, is they delight in other teams not being successful, even if they're not playing them. But anyway, Manchester United are building a massive circus tent. Isn't that lovely? Manchester United yesterday unveiled plans for a new $2 billion stadium, which will sit at the heart of a miniature city of the future, a massive regeneration project surrounding the replacement of crumbling Old Trafford could create 92,000 jobs and 17,000 new homes. It's hoped the largest stadium in the UK, dubbed New Trafford, will be completed on land next to the current ground within 5 years, which is really quite remarkable. And it's going to be effectively then probably the most impressive stadium in third division football. That's remarkable. Fair play to them. We wish them all the success in the world. I have in studio with me Deborah Duher, who is sister of Charles Duher from Lifford, who was the victim of an attempted murder. We're just going to talk about what they've been through, Charles's condition, and I suppose just as a family and as an individual, how are you getting on, Deborah?
I think I'm just having to do day by day at the minute and meet each challenge as it presents itself at the minute. I think that's how all of my family's feeling at the moment, and unfortunately poor Charles is also feeling like that at the moment now because he is so well and it should be such a happy time for us, but unfortunately he's facing another unnecessary hurdle.
And we'll talk about that in a moment because that's an important part of his road to recovery. Yeah. Can you bring us back to the day that this assault, this attempted murder happened on him? What was that like?
It was just a normal day. Me and Mummy were going to get our nails done and we were getting ready for a big meeting that we had 2 days later. Mm. And we were all excited about it and Charles rang to see if I could pick up the dog for him, and Mummy was on the nail salon with me and I said, oh, Mummy's just finished, you'll come pick her up because I have an appointment now. And Mummy went to pick the doggy up and she come upon the most horrific parent thing any mother could ever
say. Your mother saw Charles and his father in the aftermath of this brutal attack.
She said she just walked into the house and saw what I saw.
Yeah, and I don't want you to relive that because that's not the purpose of it, because I want you to be able to be very clear in what you do want to talk about. But I don't think anyone could have prepared themselves for that. Did you think at that point that, you know, Charles was going to survive this?
There was a moment now, like when I initially came in and I seen him, I thought, oh God, this is bad. And then when I got closer to him and I seen, because from the front he looked okay, he looked like he was being sick.
Right.
And like, because he looked very bad. Like, I mean, from the neck down, like I was obviously doing a head to toe, thinking, what's up here?
Mm.
But obviously all the injuries were to the back of his head. And at that time he's, you know, I suppose it was so swollen, I didn't know he was missing, his skull was fractured into pieces. Like, I didn't know. And all I seen was blood everywhere, and then he was like projectile vomiting. Like, I'd never seen anyone, and it was just blood and
just the body in complete shock.
Just awful. It was in shock, and I just felt awful for him. And I did think for a moment, I thought, my God, like, I can't believe this is real. Like, is he gonna die? Like, and then something came to me that said, I swear to God now, something came to me and said, he's gonna be okay. I didn't hear it with my ears, but I heard it inside my body, and I knew from that moment to now that he's going to be okay. I just wish, while he's coming on so well and while he's fighting and fighting and fighting and coming through and carrying this so well, and all he wants is a bit of help. He rang me this morning to say it's clear that nobody cares.
Well, as I say, I do want to focus on that. It was clear whoever did this, and we certainly can't compromise any investigation.
Yeah.
When you beat someone about the head like Charles was beaten around the head, your intent is to extinguish their life.
That's how I feel about it, for sure. I think that whoever actually beat Charles about the head, they had an intense hatred for my brother. There's no way a stranger would come in.
Because he wasn't the only person in the house, so why was there so much focus on that area,
absolutely,
on him, unless you had the intention of...
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, absolutely. And there's a few other things that would point to the fact that they were there for Charles that we're unfortunately not able to discuss at the moment.
Of course, because thankfully these type of attacks are very, very rare.
Mm-hmm.
But what's incredibly rare is that there's no reason, no motivation. Why would a group of individuals get together, go to a house, go into that house?
That's correct.
And
who told them about Charles? Who told them where he lived? That's the question that is on our minds. And
nothing was related to them during or before the attack?
Well, before the attack, are you asking me?
Like, unless it might complicate the investigation, did the attackers say anything
to
them?
The attackers, the five people, obviously we don't really truly know until the court say who they are. I don't think we know any of them bar one. I do believe we know who one of them are, who was in the home. And I believe that person knew Charles, and I'm not going to say anymore.
Exactly, because we don't want to give them a pass.
Absolutely, okay, absolutely.
If that's what you believe. And I will fast forward then to Charles's remarkable recovery as early in the stages of that he is. But when he was transferred, when he was taken from the house, and then eventually it was clear that he needed specialist attention in relation, like, what were you being told as a family by the medics in terms of the extent of the injuries?
We were told like, Charles is not going to make it through the surgery, like, and we were showing his x-ray and showing his injuries, and they were trying to tell us, you know, they knew we were nurses, so they were trying to tell us professionally, they didn't want to say your son's going to die to mommy, but they wanted to say these are the injuries here, you know, yourself, they're very severe, we're going to do our best. And they handled it beautifully, and they really did, and the surgeons were so attentive and so kind and so good to mummy. I don't know that lovely man's name. I know his face, and I shake his hand almost every day. He comes in and thank him for chat, but they come in such a big group. I've never had the chance to ask that man what his name is, because they're so busy. But he was so good. He saved his life. And after that, the nurses and doctors and surgeons in ICU maintained his life for, I don't know how they managed it, but they done it.
So post-surgery, there was quite a period of time that he was clinging to life.
Clinging, absolutely clinging, but...
And that niggle that you had, that he would be okay, did that waver? Were you saying able to stay around his bed? Listen, I know Charles
when
is going
to
be okay.
When they told me, I just thought, you don't know what you're talking about. You're
it's crazy
not
that,
God.
Isn't it?
I looked at them and I said, you're not God. You're not telling me what is going to happen here because you have no control over the situation. The same as me. The only person that has any control here is God. And he's the only, he worked through each of them and he saved my brother's life.
When then did he show signs of recovery? That, in other words, that...
I suppose it was a bit of a funny situation. I suppose he began with... sorry, I'm just going to be a bit
No,
emotional.
That's okay. And I really was trying to avoid doing that. But
no,
it's funny.
Okay.
It's funny the bit that's got you, isn't it? It's that bit where you were given no hope, but you felt... So
yeah.
I think it's almost...
It's like
it's
a gratitude.
It's almost a happy emotion,
yeah.
If that makes sense, rather than...
Yeah. So it is, I do feel a lot of gratitude to everyone involved in helping Charles. I really, really do, including all the medias and everybody that's helped us get the things that he needs. But I suppose in Charles it was a bit of a roller coaster because his injuries were so severe and so unusual that his symptoms post-surgery were also unusual and quite severe. He was in such high levels of pain. I don't know. I've never seen anything like it, and I remember praying. I remember going on my knees outside the room and just praying and saying, please make it stop, like, please make it stop. But then I also remembered seeing this thing, seeing this thing that had a caterpillar on it, and it was like, we can cut the caterpillar out and make it easy for the caterpillar, but the caterpillar won't be strong enough then to face the world.
Right.
When they come out, it was a lovely wee thing, and I kind of thought that was a wee message for me to be like, just be a bit more patient, and in God's time, and it'll happen.
Do you know, it's funny when you sort of listen, read the updates, and you hear the stories and all of that kind of stuff. As someone who's not involved with it, I never even considered that he would be lying there in pain, if that makes sense. In my head, it was like, okay, he's in a coma, and then he feels nothing.
No.
And then he wakes up and then it's kind of positive and moving forward. We don't, up from the outside, maybe consider that you're watching him
so
in pain.
From my understanding, my brother had to be given enough, what was described to me, enough sedation to put down an elephant to control his pain. And it didn't control his pain. His pressures were still elevated. He still suffered for the entirety. They gave him the max of what they could give any loving being. And he still suffered for 4.5 weeks straight until his pressures began to finally begin to drop.
How much of his recovery so far do you put down to A, his fitness, physical fitness, but B, his will
to
come back to us?
Absolutely. He has a will and he loves, our family adore each other. Our family are very much...
close.
We are what matters to us, and that is it. He wanted to come back to us. He wanted to come back to his life. He has a beautiful life. He has beautiful friends. He has a beautiful partner. Their family is so beautiful. She's been by his side from the very beginning of this. Like, I can't tell you how much of a support her and her family have been to us, and his friends have been to us. Mm. He has nothing but life to live. He is fit. He is healthy. He's gorgeous. He's successful. He's so smart. He can do anything he wants. And see, after this year, he doesn't have to be here. He's the kind of guy that he can put his hand to anything. It doesn't matter what people do to him or take from him. He's going to go and get whatever he wants.
Well, I think he's already proven that. He's already proved that in terms of the want to live.
Yeah, absolutely. The will, absolutely, will and want to live. Absolutely.
Right, so obviously he's from the Republic. He lives in Lifford, right?
Well, he actually lives in Derry with his partner, Charlotte. And before that, he lived in Australia for 9 months. And prior to that, he was living in Belfast for a time.
So it's a complicated trick where he's from.
Like I say, he's quite interested in business and he has a successful guy and he's a smart guy and he goes around and he wants to experience life and he's met a lot
of
people.
That's cool, that's brilliant.
And anybody that you'll talk to about him will say what I've said about Charles, anyone that's actually met him, and they'll tell you how business savvy he is. He's a really smart guy.
He's a doer, not a talker.
Absolutely, that's dead right. He's a doer, not a talker. And since he's been back, him and Charlotte have been considering where they're actually going to go in the world to live. They're actually planning on moving somewhere out of this country altogether. But in the meantime, they've been staying in Charlotte's home in Derry. And I suppose, I think wherever you got that information is the same place that I think the Royal Victoria got their information.
Yeah, I just, it's not living, it's just I thought he was a living guy.
Yeah.
Right. So where he's actually
he
living.
Is, at, he is at any, Donegal man.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, so where absolutely. He's actually yeah. living at any yeah. given time,
yeah.
I wasn't even considering that.
No, do you know what? It's important for me to get that out there, because I'll tell you why it's important for me to get that out there. It is going to bring me to the issues that I have, I'm experiencing okay. at the moment. And that's why I think it's important that information's out there and people actually understand the background to Charles's situation at the moment. Mm-hmm. And that's why I wanted to put that out there.
Good. Well, this is the opportunity to clarify everything, yeah. isn't it? Yeah. In terms of his recovery now, where is he at? Is he able to communicate?
Yeah.
Is he able to get up, move around? Yeah. What is his prognosis with all the right care?
So Charles at the moment is able, the only problem that he's big barrier that he's struggling with, and we're also struggling with, because he's so thirsty and he's so dry, as he can't swallow and he can't eat. He's also becoming emaciated, because those feeds are not enough. There's 3,000 calories, yeah. can't maintain his weight. He's a big, massive, huge tank of a man.
Yeah, I get you.
And he is absolutely emaciated. Like, he is emaciated like a skeleton. Mm. And it's just awful. Like,
it's astonishing how quickly that can happen when... you're laying
he
down.
He was a big, strong lad for about 2 weeks. Big, strong lad for 2 weeks. And then I'm telling you, after about just coming to the end of the 2 weeks, the muscle, he just began to fade away. He just began to lose himself. It was scary to watch now. It's very quick and rapid.
So hopefully then that all comes back over time. What is the complication in terms of him being classed as a... living in the Republic, even though he lived in Derry or elsewhere, yeah. well, and where his treatment, and what's the problem here?
The problem here is that there are three ladies from finance, and the consultant is looking after Charles came to meet with us yesterday, and they brought three nurses from the ward as well to come in and sit there, but they didn't speak. They didn't advocate for Charles in any way anyways. But the three financial ladies explained to us that the Royal Victoria Hospital isn't run by the consultant that's in charge of Charles's care. Mm-hmm. He doesn't run his department. He doesn't run the neurosurgery. It's run by finance. And she explained to me that when Charles initially came in, the finance manager of the hospital contacted the HSE, and someone in the HSE, who they won't give us a name for, told them that Charles lived in the address of the incident.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they were maybe told that the address where the incident occurred.
Or maybe it's just presumed.
I think it was presumed, and I think a mistake was made. And I think by virtue of that mistake being made by someone who has no understanding of the consequences, that kind of a mistake.
So what is the difference in terms of his care going forward? If they believe, and we'll get to what the difference would be if he's seen to have been living in Derry, but if they believe that he was living in Lifford, the assault happened in Lifford, and he just happened to go to the nearest hospital with this speciality. What do they want at this point? They want him to move?
They want Charles to go to be transferred to Letterkenny General, where he is at risk of the suspects making another attempt on his life. Mm-hmm. They want him to go there because they believe he's not entitled to their care, and they have allotted him into a legislation that doesn't apply to him because he has an address in the north of Ireland. As a result of that, 3 weeks ago, Charles went for a measurement of his brain to have his plate ordered.
Mm-hmm.
That was done on the same day. And from that day, Charles, the consultant, was supposed to sign a piece of paper and order that plate to be made. That plate cost £5,000 to be made.
Mm-hmm.
And the consultant spoke to us about this and warned us. He told us initially there'd be no problem with it, but then called us in for a meeting and warned us that finance had an issue with it and that they weren't going to fund it. So we said, that's grand, can we pay for it ourselves? We'll give you the money, will you pass it to them? And he said, then he came back to us and said, no, they won't accept. And I said, can you get us a meeting with them yourselves?
Mm-hmm.
And we had that meeting just yesterday. And we came down and we put it to them yesterday, and we told them, you have made a mistake. We can give you evidence that you have made a mistake. Why will you not just change your mistake and get Charles the care he needs? As a result, now yesterday would have been the date that Charles would have actually been told, hey, Charles, your skull is ready. We're now waiting for you to put you into a slot in theatre to have your skull. But unfortunately, yesterday, Charles was told, no, we don't have an answer for you. We need to speak to finance, Charles first. And Charles wasn't allowed into the meeting because they felt it would impact Charles negatively if he heard what they had to say. And I agree, because they have totally disregarded Charles as a human being.
But just in relation to where he is, right? He's in a hospital with expertise in this area.
Yep.
sort of logically, in terms of his, regardless of where he's from, logically he would stay, would he not, under the same team and the same consultants, right?
And
then, so even if right, he was from Lifford, is there not an arrangement whereby the HSE would fund that?
Yeah.
For the continuance of care. Yeah. That would be logical, because he kind of goes back to square one, presumably, if he moves to a hospital in the Republic. So regardless of whether he lives in Derry or Lifford.
Yes, he'll be referred back to the Royal. It'll just take a much longer period.
That's it.
It'll take a lot, and it'll cost more funding from the taxpayers.
Have you anyone advocating on your behalf or engaging with the HSC on this?
We have asked Sinn Féin to talk with them. Sinn Féin have written to them, but they have actually just had the meeting with us after that and told us they don't care. They're not interested. This is about money. They said that they are putting their foot down, and they're not. They actually, when I asked them to write down that we've told them that we have evidence, they were a minute in the meeting and they were not even taking minutes of what I was asking them. Mm-hmm. I had to ask her to write down, can you tell me that we are.
So that gets it, makes it even more frustrating.
It makes it even more. Like, and then when I asked, wait to hear this, this is what really irks me. Mm-hmm. This is the people that are looking after our service and our funds, our money that comes out of our wages. Every half of our wages, 50% of most people's wages come out of their bank at the end of the month, and it goes towards services like this. And this lady is paid, each three of them are paid over £80,000 a year to deny somebody a 5 grand plate being made. And to deny taking private health insurance for it, to deny taking the money, to deny taking cash, to deny taking a cheque, to deny taking a bank transfer. Why? Because they want to make him wait. They actually told us he's not special. They said he can just wait like everyone else.
Yeah, but okay, like I like common sense.
Yeah, see, I like common sense.
And I think
I don't like waste of time and waste of money, and a bed's being held up with somebody that doesn't need to be on.
It's all there already. Yeah. It's really just throwing you into bureaucracy. That's the only thing really this does at this point, because the end result, the net result, would be the same, right? Except he's up, down, left and right.
Yeah.
So you're at an impasse now, right? Are you? So.
What I'm asking now, okay, from this, and this might seem a lot to people to ask, but I'm not asking you to just do this for Charles. I'm asking you to do this for yourselves as well. Because if you have a look, even just at any hospital that you know in any local community, it's jam-packed, it's full. People in it are generally either waiting on a placement or waiting on a package of care, or people with heart attacks are dying in waiting rooms because someone in there has an alcohol problem, because there's no establishment in place to deal with alcoholism or drug addictions or things that the public actually need in place. What's happening is, what I've learned yesterday, people who have no degree in healthcare are leading healthcare. People who have degrees in finance are leading healthcare. They are not at all, they don't have a duty of care. The consultant told me yesterday that he has a duty of care to Charles and he cannot do that.
That's an official duty of care.
It is an official duty of care that he cannot carry out, because the finance department of the hospital will not authorise the consultant, the brain surgeon, one of the smartest people in the world, one of the most important people in the world, they will not allow him to do his job, to write, just to even sign a piece of paper to make a plate. They won't even allow him to do that. And that's going to delay Charles for 3 weeks no matter what. We're still delayed today. We're delayed another day from getting that plate made, and Charles will always have to wait 3 weeks from the day that paper is signed.
Yeah.
Always 3 weeks.
But, I mean, like, at the end of the day, they can't force him out of the hospital either, right?
Well, by the looks of things, they are saying they can. They told us yesterday that they can, because they have it under the HSE, someone that they didn't get consent to contact. We've been in the hospital 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Why did they not ask his family where he lived?
This is no disrespect to Letterkenny University Hospital, and I'm not obviously not a medic, but surely in
his condition,
he moves to a Dublin-based hospital at the very
least. That's what I said. We said we would agree to him being moved to Beaumont, where the facilities are available for him. We did say we'd agree to that. And she said to me, why is Letterkenny not good enough for you? And I said, because it doesn't have the facilities to deal with Charles
if you have a certain, particularly brain-related injury, you get to Letterkenny or helicoptered or whatever it is to Dublin.
Charles will go, whatever hospital that they put Charles to, whether they want to put him in Altna Galvin or Letterkenny, there's two risks here. He's got an hour and a half journey to Belfast. He's got a 3 hour journey to Dublin to be saved. He's a very high risk falls. He's attached to tube still for feeding. He's got half of his skull is missing. Could you imagine if you fell and hit your head on the ground? Never mind if Charles fell and had his head on the ground. His brain would fall out and be lying on the floor beside him.
Just to clarify as well, Deborah, for clarity, if they accepted that he actually lived in Derry,
we wouldn't be having this problem.
This is based on
an assumption that they're
assuming.
They made an assumption.
Can he not make, or someone on his behalf, make a legal declaration?
We have
that
actually,
he was living in Derry.
We've asked them to contact our solicitor for legal proof, and they won't do it. They just are not interacting with us.
Hmm.
So it's very interesting. I think possibly it could be because, you know, we want to stay with Charles 24 hours a day because, like, it's not fair in the hospital. I'm not saying anything about the nurses, right? Don't get me wrong. Nurses are brilliant. But there's only one nurse to six patients that are not able to talk for themselves, walk, do anything, seizing all the time, falling around beds with tubes attached to them. And the nurse is running around having to be responsible for six of those patients. And they're having a problem with us staying 24 hours a day. I'm sorry, but Charles would be dead if we weren't there 24 hours a day to look after him.
How are you controlling how much information you're giving Charles? You know, you don't want to stress
him. We are not stressing him. Everything is positive. Unfortunately, yesterday he asked the consultant himself, he says, "Sir, when are you going to make my plate? Or are you the man going to make it? And he says, "Aye." And he says, "When are you going to make it?" And he says, "I can't answer that question. I have to have a meeting about it later." And then Charles says, "Can I come?" And then they came in and told Charles he couldn't go to the meeting. And then whenever we came back from the meeting, like, Charles actually hasn't spoken. That's the only conversation Charles has had with the doctor since being transferred down to neurology. Mm-hmm. And every single day in ICU, consultants, doctors, specialists can update us every day on every aspect of Charles's care. Since we moved to neurology, we've actually been told it's not the done thing here. You don't speak to the doctors here, so you can't talk to the doctors about Charles's health. Charles couldn't even speak. We weren't allowed to know what medicine Charles was getting, because we weren't able to speak to a doctor to find that information out.
It's remarkable stuff. How much of his skull is missing?
Half of it.
Yeah.
The whole left side of his skull is gone.
One can only imagine
what
it must feel like to be
sneezed. He sneezed yesterday and goes, he was in pain for about 45 minutes afterwards. Mm. He had a throbbing headache. Told the consultant that, and the consultant was sitting there in front of these finance ladies. The finance girl goes, "Well, what can I do?" And the consultant went,
"Yeah,
like, as if, sure, it's nothing to me. I'm still getting paid my wages at the end of the month." Like, you know,
what he's doing next, Deborah. I mean, obviously, I know you spoke to the likes of the BBC, NI, UTV, us, and others, right? And you're hoping that, I think, really, at the very least, what you need at this point is for this state to take ownership of Charles and an interest in his care, and liaise with this hospital in Belfast and say, "Look, you know, whatever needs to be put in place needs to be put in place." I don't know
whether, if it's the case that the Royal, like, just point blank are refusing and are saying he's living here, then they are going to have to come up and say, "Look, we're taking responsibility, get him treated."
Let's just understand why they won't accept.
But, like, that's because, that, to be honest, like, that's just us feeding into a delusion that the Royal
I don't believe
that we should be doing that. I believe as a people we should be talking about truth, and we should be getting justice and getting the right thing done here. We should be focusing on what is the true right thing to do here. We should have a moral compass. We should go for that. If we live in a society that doesn't have that, we have to really reflect on what kind of society that we live in, what kind of powers are there that be, what are we paying our taxes for? Are we paying taxes to be bullied? Are we paying taxes to be told what to do, to sit, to what are we paying them for? Are we being paid to be skint, to not be able to buy a loaf of bread? The vast majority of people are heat versus eat at the minute in this country. Yeah. What, so you just bust your brains open, they still won't help you. I'm sorry, but if that was the Taoiseach's son, or some politician's son, or that surgeon's son, or some of the finances doll's son or daughter, that'd be well sorted anyway, that's for sure, because it doesn't matter what you know, it matters who you know.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, hopefully they know Charles now because of what used to do.
And I mean,
he's got very strong advocates, so
that's all I can do is advocate for him. And I wish I didn't have to do this. Yeah. I wish I could enjoy my brother's recovery. I wish I could have been in pain when this happened. I wish I didn't have to constantly fight every authority that's supposed to protect and serve us, not bully and intimidate and harass us.
So position one then is accept that he is living in Derry. If you need legal proof,
we have it.
Your family will provide that.
Our
solicitor
is ready to write to them.
And just progress his recovery there.
All we want is the plate ordered. And we don't, to be honest with you, after that conversation, I don't want that surgeon to touch my brother's head. I want him to go to Dublin because I don't trust that guy. Okay, I don't trust anybody who would say they have a duty of care and then turn around and say, "But 5,000's too steep. You know, let's have a look at your wages. Like, we know you're rotten."
Deborah,
you know,
with money, I know what you're saying. Deborah Duher, thanks very much for that. Deborah is sister of Charles Duher from Lifford, who is thankfully recovering, but obviously that recovery is being hindered by this
finance department who rule the hospital.
Down to money. Yeah. Okay, we'll be back with more after these. Donegal Gaelic football legend Eamon McGee will feature in the series finale of TG Cahir's popular Lícre Gael programme. Now in its 23rd season, Lícre Gael provides the hidden stories behind some of the biggest names in Gaelic games. Eamon McGee's with me now to flag this. Good morning, Eamon.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you? Wait, before this goes out.
I am a wee bit nervous, bit nervous now, but listen, it'll be grand, whatever people think of it, it'll be okay.
I mean, obviously you divulge in a programme like this as much as you want to, but obviously then you do sort of push potentially into your comfort zone. Would you be a good talker off camera in terms of, stuff that affects you maybe on a deeper level, some of the struggles maybe whilst you were playing the game. Like, would you be a sharer like that, or was this sort of out of your comfort zone?
No, I wouldn't be good enough at it. Now, if you were to chat to my close circle, I wouldn't be the first man to reach out. Good at identifying a problem, but maybe not so much fixing it. And it was like the show did take you out of the comfort zone. It was nearly kind of therapeutic in a way, in terms of what you talked about and the bits that went into it now. And there was an awful lot. So there's an awful lot to cover in that hour. But I think Edel, the director, has assured me it's gonna be a good job, and she's confident on the final product.
Why would you say okay to something like this? Because, right, I think it'd be very easy, Oisin Kelly, Brendan Devaney, one of the paper guys, say, look, can we have a sit down and talk about your career, and you can talk about the highs and lows, the wins, the losses, the dressing room stuff. Easy to chat about, right? But then the other stuff, how did you have to think long and hard before you got into it?
Well, I initially turned it down, Greg. Like, I'd been asked on the, I think it was the Thursday or the Friday, and I turned it down, and she says, listen, go and have a think about it for a few days, because I didn't see, I'd watched the Lícre Gael. I'm a fan of the Lícre Gael series, and there's a load of them that are powerful programs, and I just didn't think that I would have the same story to tell now. But, a discussion with a few mates, and with Joanne, obviously, and says it'd be nice thing for the kids to have. Maybe in the future, and they've got their day where the cameras came to the house there, and they're all a bit excited about seeing this now. So it's something that's there now, and it says that if people don't like it or if people like it, it's probably none of my business. I'm more concerned about my closer circle and how they view it, and if they're happy with it, then I'm happy.
Yeah, and I think really these types of programs and conversations, people are generally actually quite acceptant of it, because whether someone agrees or disagrees with you or likes or dislikes you, you generally can relate to another human being once you get all that crap out of the way. We're very familiar with your on field and some of your off field stuff, and I don't want to talk about stuff that you're talking about in the show, because in fairness to them, I think it's right that people should tune in at 9:30 on TG Cahir on Thursday. But just give us a taster of when you talk about maybe some of the stuff outside your comfort zone that you go into, what kind of stuff do you discuss, as well as and what it, and how it contributes to who you are and your success and otherwise on the pitch?
Probably what one of the themes that were coming out of it was, once you're in, there's a position of responsibility nearly once you're playing for a successful team like Donegal, and you're viewed as a leader, and the responsibilities are that you kind of have to be a good leader and a good example. And I probably wasn't for a large part of my career. I know people talk about no regrets and this and that. And there's nothing that keeps me awake at night in terms of that there. Now, I've made peace with it, but there is part of me that wishes that, I could have been a good leader, like, say, Michael Murphy, and been a better example for young Donegal GA fans to look up to. And that's probably a theme that steps out. And I say it's hard to get. There's other parts of it where Edel delves into in terms of the political stuff, in terms of the the views outside of football now, but it's just so hard to get that all in the hour.
Yeah, for sure. And also, too, I think, you know, at the peak of your career, we were actually in a very different country in many different ways as well. And you
were
I know, but if you were too clean cut, you'd have probably stuck out like a sore thumb. I think, you know, it just seems like a different world that we live in now. Listen, I can't wait to watch it. It's on TG Cahir. I wish I had more time. But anyway, we can chat again, but we want to see it for the first time on the show because they come up with this idea. It's Lee Cregale. It's on TG Cahir at 9:30 on Thursday. And you can catch up on it a little bit later on. Before I let you go, I must ask you just about Sunday, the end of the league. Interesting comments from Jim McGuinness. He wants to win every game, but he's thinking of the championship and maybe going deep into the championship, and he wants to give other players championship success. Tyrone are coming up hungry for points. How do you think we're going to set out, and how do you think we'll fare in that game, Eamon?
I think like it's never going to be a case for Donegal go out to lose a game. I don't think Jim or the Donegal lads will ever do that. I think it's just about where their focus is and what and how they prepare for the game. It's not ideal to be making. If you beat Tyrone, you're probably going to end up in the league final, and that's not ideal preparation. But I say that the lads are so professional in their approach. You know, you have Jim, you have Anthony McFadden, Colm McFadden, Neil, and Luke Barrett, and these guys, that if they do make the league final, the approach will seamlessly change in terms of how they go about it. So Tyrone aren't going particularly well, but they're always going to lift it for Donegal. And I think with the O'Donnell Park record, I think Tyrone could nip a point there. So it'll actually be very, very interesting to see if Jim does give game time to a few squad players, how they respond to the Tyrone game. So it'll be a game we look forward to.
Certainly will. Listen, and we look forward to that and the show on Thursday night. Eamon, thank you so much for joining us, and take care of yourself. Thank you.
Cheers, Greg. Thank you.
Bye-bye. We'll be back with more after the news and obituary notices.